On this week's episode of Video Culture, we'll take a look back with our Season 1 retrospective.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion. Two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills, there will be thrills, and there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
And welcome to Video Culture. I'm your host, Ryan Acree.
And I'm Matthew Essery.
And this is our Season 1 retrospective.
Amazing we made it this far, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, I guess podcasts can now have seasons.
Yes.
So we're going to have seasons, too. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
It seems fitting. We've been doing this for a little over a year now. I mean, we've been recording, but our podcast has only been out for about a year.
Yeah. By the time this hits, it'll be almost the 1 year anniversary of when the podcast launched.
Yeah. So, and we've also watched 50 movies.
That's a good round number to kind of look back at.
Now, you may have noticed this is episode 27, and the reason that we say 50 is because that really one of our episodes, episode 16, was really a look back at video formats.
It was, which we thought was interesting, and I'm glad we did it, but it didn't really follow our normal format.
Yeah. So with doing two movies, like every one, we kind of had to count up, and we missed one. So episode 26 really marked where we finished off 50 movies. So that feels like a nice round number. And so then we land here at episode 27, where we take a look back.
It's because we have no movies to watch this week, so we're doing something different as we wrap up and celebrate the fact that we made it, man.
We did.
I remember when we first sat and talked about this for the first time, and I was like, you want to do a podcast, huh?
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'm in, and I'm glad I did.
Yeah. I mean, it's and talking about something that, you know, you are extremely passionate about, and I'm passionate about, too. I mean, I love music. I love love movies. We love pop culture. And just to go back and explore these movies and really almost to have an excuse to really watch some of these movies, because I know you had some movies like in your collection. You're like, yeah, I have it. I've never even opened it.
Yes. You know? That happens when you love movies. You end up buying things thinking, oh, I'll watch this eventually. And then you never do.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I have movies like that myself. I think one of the movies right now that I haven't opened, I'll go ahead and admit, is Dead Poets Society. You know, it's still in the wrapper, still in the package. Picked it up somewhere, probably at Target, walking through the aisles. Yeah. Like, I just, oh yeah, I need to have this movie on DVD. This is an ownable movie, you know.
Yeah, like, you don't want to leave it there. Like, it's too good to leave there.
Yeah, you can't just leave it for somebody else to come take it. And you're like, I need to own this movie.
It's like a puppy in a pound. You can't leave the thing there to its fate. Yeah. You have to rescue it and give it a good home.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Like, it's my movie now. I own this. Because really, your movie collection is a lot like your, you know, somebody's, like, vinyl collection. It says who you are.
It says a lot about you as a person.
Right, yes. Exactly.
It goes back to that great line from that movie High Fidelity with our alumni, John Cusack.
Yeah.
It's not what you're like, it's what you like.
Ah,
that's important.
That's good. I love that line. That's such an awesome movie.
It really is, yeah.
We got to get around to doing that movie, but
eventually, yeah.
Yeah. So, but really, I mean, this podcast, I mean, really, it's really changed on how we even approach the podcast and how we do the podcast. I mean, I remember going back to that first episode going, we were just going to talk about these movies. Like, we had no plan.
Yeah.
We had nothing. Like, both of us had watched the movies and we were just going to sit and talk about it. Like,
yes.
No format, no notes.
I mean, we still struggle with formatted notes a little bit, but we've gotten better.
Yeah, no, hardly any preparation.
Yeah, I tell you what I noticed most when we go back and listen to those is we so badly wanted to talk the movie through, like the plot.
Yeah,
and it took me probably 8 episodes to you don't have to explain the plot.
Right.
If anyone's really interested in what we're saying, they're going to go check it out.
Right. Right. And if you haven't seen it, then, you know, hopefully what we're talking about is going to inspire you to go see it.
Yeah. And if we say it's terrible, you know, you're going to avoid it anyway. So.
Right. And hopefully you've seen part of the movies or, seen the movies or seen at least parts of them or familiar enough with, you know, with these movies.
Yeah. But yeah, I had to learn to give you guys, our audience, more credit.
Yeah.
That you didn't need us to tell you what happened in the movie.
You don't need a plot synopsis. If you want a plot synopsis, the best place to go is to IMDb.
Or Wikipedia.
Yeah, you can go to Wikipedia, and it explains there's a plot synopsis there, but I really like IMDb's plot synopsis a lot better. You can follow them a lot closer. I think they're a little shorter, and it really doesn't, you know, the Wikipedia ones kind of dally around because they're written by multiple people.
Yes.
IMDb is a little more, scrutinized or reviewed more. Yeah,
it is.
Basically, yeah.
Well, and I think what it was for me was I wasn't yet trusting that people wanted to actually hear our opinions.
Yeah.
Which is weird because, you know, I did that as a job. I write movie reviews. But it's different when you're talking it out and you have a microphone and you're wearing a headset and we're in this recording studio set up. It made me a little more self-conscious in the beginning where I felt like I had to kind of hold the audience's hand, and you don't have to do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know that what we were talking about when we were having, you know, conversations in the office, because we were having interesting discussions, and then we would have 3 or 4 or 5 people start to gather around. And I knew that we were starting to hit on, you know, points, and I'm like, we need to bring this to a different forum, you know, so it can reach more people and we can really get those like views out. And, you know, I'm not somebody that says that I know everything about movies. I'm just a regular average guy.
I certainly don't. I just watch a lot of them.
Yeah.
You know?
But yeah, I mean, I've certainly learned a lot. But yeah, I mean, we kind of had to stumble through, you know, the format to figure out how we really wanted to talk about movies, how we really wanted to explore them, mm-hmm. how we really wanted to get like sort of the essence out of them of what we were trying to say or what the movies were trying to say to us so we can convey that to the audience.
And also, I didn't want to like copy anyone else's format. I was very conscious of not listening to other podcasts in a similar vein because I didn't want to rip off anyone else's concepts.
Yeah.
So we wanted us to find our own voice.
Right. And it took me a couple of episodes to really feel to really realize that there are some connecting points between some of the two movies that we were watching.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy cow, like these facts, like I'm reading these facts about these movies and realize that like these two movies have a connection that neither of us saw beforehand. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to bring that to the forefront and I wanted to talk about like those extra things, those extra trivial things, because I love trivia and I love that, you know, I love those little details.
And I love the idea of how they connect in theme and concept and sometimes in emotional qualities, also sometimes in the way they're filmed or their visuals, there'll be echoes of the films that we choose to watch. And I often think I often wonder if that's subconscious on our part.
Yeah.
Without even realizing that we're doing it.
Yeah.
That we find, you know, overlap unintentionally, but it's definitely there.
Well, there are some that are directly intentional, like, but almost somewhat intentional, like the one we just did, like Minority Report and Total Recall. I mean, those were both Philip K. Dick stories that were science fiction, that were like of the mind type stories, but we didn't really realize how connected they really were. Yeah,
just in concept and in theme.
Right.
We thought they were related, but it was deeper than we thought, and that was interesting.
Yeah, so just going through the list, I mean, so both of us, we printed up a list of all the movie, all the episodes and all the movies that we have.
You guys should see the format that Ryan did here. It's beautiful, man. It's beautifully formatted. He's got Ebert's ratings, these things, the Rotten Tomatoes scores for the ones that don't have Ebert reviews. It's really beautiful work here, man.
Well, I keep a list of all of our show schedule. And like what, you know, what episode we're doing what two movies that we're doing what. So therefore we can keep fresh in our mind. Like what was episode 5? What was episode 7? Because we got to keep all this stuff straight. Like there's too much stuff that we got to keep going. And then also the same like document, the same like Word document, right? This the one on Google Drive. It also has all of the other ideas that we've come up with because we've come up with other ideas, whether they be tied to a theme, whether they be tied to a director, an actor, some sort of thing of like, hey, let's put this movie with this movie. Okay. And so we've had brainstorming ideas or like we'll just come up with one out of the blue and then that gets added to the list. And then eventually it'll make it up to the top of the list where it actually gets an episode number. Yeah. And that's really exciting for me. When we have these ideas and like, oh, we're really going to watch these movies. We're really going
to
do this.
We're probably getting to that
one. Yeah, we're getting to this one. This one's really cool. But I love the, you know, I love the whole process. We brainstorm and come up with, you know, what we're going to do. Like,
well, that's one thing I found fun about this when we first started plotting this. And when we still have production meetings about this, because we do have production meetings. I know that's probably shocking to some of our audience.
Well, they're really informal, very informal. Yeah,
but our list is ever-growing. Mm. I feel like we're never going to run out of ideas.
No. I don't think we are either. There's way too many movies for us to start running out of ideas, I think. Because I think that, you know, all movies some have some sort of, you know, value to them. Mm-hmm. You know, whether they be ultimately terrible. But at least, I mean, enough people and enough money and enough... You know, stuff had to be put behind this movie for something to be created.
Yeah. It's a titanic effort. Yeah.
Right. And it still says something. It may not be the best at saying whatever it's trying to say, but at least it's there. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So, it deserves critical analysis because it has critical value.
Exactly. Thank you. You know? This is much more well put than I could say. So let's just go through the list right quick of all the movies that we watched. I'll go ahead and just ask you first, what was the you know, one or two or three movies that surprised you the most?
The most surprising thing I saw? I know I mentioned this a lot, but I was amazed how much I loved Master and Commander Far Side of the World.
Really?
Like, I always heard it was good.
Yeah.
But I thought I'd watch it and think, it's all right. Uh-huh. That's what I thought. I thought that'd be my reaction. Like, oh, it's interesting. It's good. Whatever.
So you didn't think it would be good?
I didn't think it would blow me away. It blew me away.
Okay.
Like, I loved it. And I was like, wow, why should I be watching this movie years ago?
Okay.
That's definitely one of them.
Okay.
Another movie I really liked that just really, and I know it was going to be good, but again, surprised how much I loved it was The Long Goodbye.
Oh, really?
The Long Goodbye was great.
Really?
And I was expecting to like it, but I loved it.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting, because one of the interesting things that I put about that movie, and I think I talked about it during the podcast, is that is The Long Goodbye, Roger Ebert, back in 1973, originally gave that movie 3 stars out of 4, okay? Mm-hmm. But when he re-reviewed it, like when he like built his website and started putting everything, he started redoing, you know, a lot of the old, you know, stuff that he did.
Yeah.
And in 2006 gave that movie 4 stars.
It's really great.
Right.
But it's a movie you have to kind of sit with for a while to realize it's great.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's one of those movies that, you know, I really liked, I really enjoyed. You think it's like really slow and sleepy, and then you realize like later, like the impact all of that has, you know, on everything. You're just like, wait, hold on. So, yeah, and it's kind of like one of the, I don't want to say it's like a Usual Suspects type of movie, but it almost is like that because it ends on such a, you know, cold note, and you're just like, oh, and you
kind of get what it's all about. Like, it feels so kind of shaggy and like almost like a hangout film,
mm-hmm.
and then it kind of focuses it in super quick, and it kind of gut punches you, and you're like, it's so satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah, everything kind of seems wandering, and then that last little bit just like brings everything into focus. Like,
and it's like, it scratches that movie itch, and it's just so good. And my third surprising movie is The Razor's Edge.
The Razor's Edge.
Because I had always heard it was a Titanic. I've used that word twice today. I've always heard it was a major failure in every way. That's what that was always the narrative I've heard of The Razor's Edge.
Yeah,
and it's certainly an odd movie.
Yeah.
But man, I have thought about it probably once a week.
Really?
Ever since we saw it.
Oh yeah. I would have to agree. That's one of my favorite movies that we have done. Yeah.
I see why Bill Murray was obsessed with getting it made.
Yeah, I completely agree. I absolutely. Surprising for me, was The Conversation.
Such a good movie, right?
I mean. Originally, a friend of mine, you know, I said in the podcast, like, he gave me the Laserdisc, and he's like, yeah, you need to see this. And I was like, okay. I tried to watch it, and it wound up, it had laser rod on it, and I couldn't watch it. And then we're like, okay, we're doing the podcast, and you brought it up even without me even bringing it up. And I said, oh, yeah, I want to see these movies. And Gene Hackman, Gene Hackman has been in other movies, and he's played, like, different, you know, parts, and he hasn't really been, like, the major star in a lot of the stuff that I've seen, you know? And so, cause even Hoosiers was kind of before my time, you know? And, when I watched that movie, I was just completely captivated by the whole thing. And it really made me think about that movie like days and weeks after I saw that movie.
Hackman is one of those kind of actors where, because we're younger and we weren't really around for his heyday.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of forget how great, you don't ever know how great he was until you go back and watch those older films.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a dynamo.
Right.
Just an amazing actor. He still is. He's retired. He's happily retired in his mid-80s.
Right.
But, I mean, he was phenomenal. He's mind-blowingly good.
Right.
So convincing at whatever he tried to do, mm-hmm. whether it was comedy or drama.
Mm-hmm.
He always nailed it. He was always 100% believable.
Right. And really you can't go wrong with Scorsese, man.
Coppola.
Francis Ford Coppola, excuse me. Yeah. Scorsese.
All right. Well, Scorsese's been in the news a lot lately. Yeah. So he's got a new movie about to come out, which will be out by the time this comes out.
No, and I recently saw there was a thing on TV. It was like they were having a conversation, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to digress here, but it was like Scorsese, Coppola, Robert De Niro,
mm-hmm.
and
was it Pesci?
Al Pacino.
Okay,
yeah, like all sitting around, like talking and like,
nice, yeah.
Like oh my gosh, like
cause, yeah, yeah, because they've all Pacino and De Niro and Pesci have reunited, for a new Scorsese film, which will be out by the time this comes out. But that's why, and yeah,
right. Another thing that surprised me, I mean, when you brought up the idea of, like, we should do genre, like, we should do Westerns. We did Westerns on our 8th episode. And you said, we should do Rio Bravo. And I'm like, okay, it's John Wayne. And I was like, okay, we got to do a John Wayne Western, sure. And then you said, okay, we'll go do Django. This is a spaghetti Western. And I was like, really, for real? Really, for real. And
I had to kind of twist your arm a little bit.
You did. And surprisingly, those are, you know, surprisingly good. Even Django, like in a foreign language where it's overdubbed, and it's still just a super captivating movie. Yeah.
It's so cool and gritty, and it's so masculine.
Right. And, well, I mean, there's a reason why that movie has inspired so many other Django spinoff movies because that is right. But I mean, it's like that's the father. You know, that's where like everything sort of starts off from. You know, that's the nucleus.
Yeah, it's like that nexus of like Western cool with his duster and his low hat dragging his coffin through the mud.
Right.
What a great image that is.
Oh yeah.
One of the greatest images ever in movie history, in my opinion, is the opening scene of him dragging that coffin strapped to his back.
Yeah, and you could see a lot of the influence in even, you know, modern filmmakers like Robert Rodriguez or Tarantino. I mean, you can tell that is where, you know, some of this stuff came from. Like some of those, you know, not everything that Tarantino did or not everything that Robert Rodriguez did.
But like you're seeds.
Like, yeah, right. You're like, oh, man, okay. That's where these guys are getting influence from. It's like going to the source, you know?
Yeah. And we're going to get more into that in season two. I'm going to make you watch some other more obscure things, and it's going to be fun.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. And I have to say, other surprise movie, I was surprised how terrible Hudson Hawk was.
that was good. I know we're probably going to talk about disappointing movies. That's going to be my number one with a bullet when it comes to disappointing movies.
I know I'm surprised at some of the, you know, some of the ratings that Roger Ebert gave some of the movies. Sure. You know, like he gave See No Evil, Hear No Evil 1.5. He gave UHF a 1. What were some of these others? I mean, Fletch, he gave a 2.5.
He gave Working Girl a 4, which I'll never get over. I hate that movie.
He did give Lucas a 4.
Lucas is really good.
And he gave The Conversation a 4.
Yeah. And again, a 4 is perfect in Ebert's rating system.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I seriously think that some of these are not deserving of their numbers. And yeah, there may be a couple of them that are more deserving of a number. I mean, he gave, you know, Mermaids a 3. He gave Working Girl a 4.
I hated Working Girl so much. It's so 80s and annoying and...
Oh man. Well, maybe we'll do, you know, another Harrison episode or
we gotta do another Harrison. We gotta get to Mosquito Coast eventually.
Yeah, maybe we'll do Mosquito Coast and Sabrina or something like
that.
Yeah,
Sabrina is a good romantic comedy that he's in for sure.
That'll
the palette, yeah.
But we've also heard that Mosquito Coast was one of Harrison Ford's favorite movies.
Yeah.
And that is the one I think that he like really tried to like get an Oscar for. Because it was the movie that he did like right after Witness. I mean, he got nominated. Yeah. And I think that he was like, well, maybe if I push it a little further, I can, you know, go. And he got nothing from the Academy. Like no nominations, like anything. Because Working Girl is his only nomination.
Yeah, it's oftentimes when actors try for awards is when they fail to get awards, you know?
Right. But you still have to see, like, what kind of performance that they put into it.
And also, Mosquito Coast is a Peter Weir movie, and after seeing Witness and Master Commander, I really want to see more Peter Weir.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So Mosquito Coast is coming, maybe not in season 2.
Yeah, because now you're, like, a huge Peter Weir fan, right?
Yeah, I had no idea. Like, he was a director, I had heard his name. But I never had any reference for why he was good or who he was.
Yeah.
And thanks to our loyal listener, you know, Steven, I checked him. We watched these movies on his recommendation.
Yeah.
And they're great. And I'm going to watch more now.
Okay.
I haven't gotten around to it yet because I watch a lot of movies anyway.
Uh-huh.
But we're going to get to them.
Yeah. Well, going back to disappointed or most disappointed movies, we were both incredibly disappointed by Hudson Hawk. We know it's like really well loved by a lot of people, and they're like, "Oh,
people
yeah, it's
are
great.
Wrong, Ryan."
I'm not gonna be that strong. I mean, you can like what you like. I mean, it's fine, but I just couldn't get there. You know what I mean? We just neither one of
it
us.
Was
could
so
really
tonally confused and
yeah.
Oh man, yeah, that was 2 hours. I'm never gonna get back.
But I know 18 again was the everything that we compare like bad movies is like, is it as bad as 18 again?
That's kind of our would you say low bar or high bar? It's kind of our limbo bar for bad quality movies.
Well, it's like the lowest of the low movies of that we've watched. I mean, it's just like, so if it can't even get over the 18 again hurdle, it's not worth watching.
Yeah. So I will say Hudson Hawk got over the 18 again hurdle.
Okay.
Cuz at least it has that one song and dance scene where they're going, "Fly Me to the Moon."
Yeah, and Parker Posey's in it.
Yeah, Parker Posey's in it.
Yeah.
So it's higher than 18 again, but I'm going to say it not by a lot to me.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah, meaning that the 18 again is like anything below it just
Just, I don't think just I could like get through anything that was below 18 again.
Below that, yeah, just forget about it. What were some of the? Oh, I know another disappointment. Into the Night.
That's a heartbreaking one.
Oh man,
I know we went into this a lot on that episode. That should have been like the movie that personified what we like about movies on this show, and it's just
failed on so many levels to deliver.
It's kind of the worst kind of film in that it's just okay.
Yeah.
You know, nothing to me is if a movie's gonna fail
with David Bowie in it. I mean, a movie that's just okay that stars well that has you know with David
it
Bowie
has so many cool people in it, especially David Bowie, and he made so few films, and it's just okay, and that is so frustrating and disappointing.
Yeah,
it makes you want to. It makes you want to you know kick rocks and just be like, damn it, you know.
Yeah, it's just absolutely. Absolutely terrible.
And people love it, so please don't send us hate mail. we wanted to like it. We tried.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not very interesting.
Mm-mm.
I'm not convinced John Landis is a good director.
Oh,
that's
wow.
another conversation.
That's another big statement.
But I'm not convinced. We don't have time for it tonight. Okay. But I'm just going to throw that out there and see if anyone responds, but I'm not convinced.
All right. Fair enough. Any other disappointments that you wanna call out? I mean, I was looking through the list. I mean, all of them to me, you know, were not really that disappointing.
Most of these, I at least really kind of liked. You know,
yeah. I mean, I liked Rapid Fire. I liked Empire Records. I liked Dragnet and Armed and Dangerous and.
I'll say, talking about movies that were bad, Trial and Error wasn't very good.
Oh, Trial and Error was also a disappointment.
But it was better than 18 again in Hudson Hawk.
Yeah, I will say that, yeah, it was.
So it's not the worst thing we watched.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
But that also was kind of confusing. I didn't really know. I mean, I kind of get the point. Like I said, I said that this is a podcast. I mean, I kind of get the point where they're going. You know, you have a guy who's like overworked and he's supposed to just like kind of kick back and enjoy life instead of working himself to death.
It just shows that Michael Richards has got limited range and he shouldn't be the focus of a movie. Because in UHF, where he plays a smaller role but does a lot of similar things, he's great, and you love him, and he's such a great character as Stanley Spadowski in UHF.
Right.
But you focus on him in Trial and Error, where he's doing similar shtick, and he's insufferable.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to go back to Surprised for a second.
Okay.
So I know two movies that I recommended that you had not seen. I mean, the whole part of like starting this podcast was, you know, tell me a movie that I haven't seen, you know, see if you can name a movie that I haven't seen or whatever.
Yeah.
Like that's how this whole thing got started. And two of the movies that, you know, I see that I've seen that you haven't, that I brought up was Silver Streak and FM.
Which were two movies I loved.
Right.
Those movies are great, great movies. I mean, I believe they were both made in the 70s. I know FM was, but Silver Streak was too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I love 70s cinema, and I love Gene Wilder, and I love Richard Pryor. So I don't know how I had never seen Silver Streak.
Yeah.
But what a great, fun movie.
It's
almost a little bit of everything. It's kind of a roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
It's got fun, comedy, action, romance.
Right.
It's like a three-course meal in a two-hour movie.
Yeah.
It's so good, and it's got those great stunts at the end with the train crashing.
Mm-hmm.
And FM is such a cool hangout movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a great 70s soundtrack.
Right.
You like all the characters. Mm-hmm. The life of the radio station stuff is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny that we started talking about that movie, and then they announced a special edition Blu-ray of it from a company called Arrow. And
I picked up. I own that now.
It was almost like a serendipity because we brought it up and we're like, well, I've never heard of this movie. And felt like a lost classic. And now people are rediscovering it because of this release.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah. And I will say Arrow did a really, really great job. The video quality is awesome. They actually have the original soundtrack, you know, that you can listen to. But they've also cleaned up the sound a lot, and the enhanced soundtrack, I guess you would say, Man, it just, I mean, it just brings the music to life even more. But if you still want to enjoy it in its original form, you know, you can switch tracks and listen to that as well. So if you want to listen to closer to the original theatrical release, like soundtrack.
Mono sound,
Well, it's not mono. It's still stereo. It's still stereo, but I will say it's from the era, I guess you would say. It's more, it's closer to the theatrical sound. Mm-hmm. But if you want a more modern sound to really bring, you know, the dialogue and the music to life in a more modern way, like you would enjoy a modern movie, so I would say listen to that. So hands off to Arrow for doing stuff like that, you know, so you can still enjoy it both ways. I mean,
Arrow is a wonderful company that we are big fans of. Arrow, if you guys are listening to this, send us some free stuff. We love you guys,
right?
We'll plug you every week if you want us
to. I mean, thanks to Arrow. All right, so I'm just still sitting here thinking, like, what are the other movies that I was really surprised of? I mean, Witness, I'd not really heard of, and I really, really liked that movie. I was really surprised by that, I guess I would say. The Crow, I was really surprised how much, when we had the podcast, I never really watched much of it, and how much that movie was so cool, you know.
It's not a deep movie, but it is dripping in cool.
It is dripping in cool. It really, and thinking about that movie too, one thing that I didn't bring up in the podcast for that episode was how much Batman like influenced like all these, you know, other movies.
It's true.
Yeah.
True. I mean, just that whole genre, really.
Yeah, that whole genre. And but because the Crow is kind of like a really, really darker sort of Batman-y, you know.
It still has that same like vengeance, running around on rooftops, fighting bad guys.
Yeah, and it's like real seedy town.
Yeah,
but there's a, like a dark supernatural element in it, you know, and stuff like that. And it's, it's a really, really great movie to watch.
And you seem surprised by Rapid Fire, to stick with Brandon Lee for a second.
Yeah,
yeah. He was a great movie star.
Yeah, I mean, I could see him up there. I mean, it was as entertaining to watch like a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie or, you know, something like that. I mean, it wasn't up there with like Lethal Weapon or Beverly Hills Cop, but it was still, you know,
satisfying and fun.
Of that action movie kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, and there was a lot of great stunts in there, to be quite honest. There was. And then to me, learning all that stuff about Beverly Hills Cop was so freaking cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
and those are fun to revisit for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I had no idea how big that franchise really was back in the 80s.
Me either. Because, you know, we were kids then, so we didn't know about box office and things like that. But yeah, it was.
Yeah. All right. So moving on. What are the movies that have resonated the most with you?
Continental Divide and The Razor's Edge. I mean, those were from the same episode, but those have really stuck with me from an emotional standpoint.
I would have to wholeheartedly agree. I mean, there's not. I mean, I think about that movie. I think about The Razor's Edge probably like once a week.
Yeah,
and I haven't rewatched it since we watched for the podcast.
What you think about it? Yeah, it crops up. Yeah.
I mean, if you have not seen this movie, do yourself a favor and go watch it. Yeah. It's I think you can watch it on Amazon Prime.
At this moment, it may not be true when this comes out, but at this moment, it is for free on Amazon Prime.
It is. So there is, and also one of the things I learned, I didn't even know this when we did the podcast, there's an actual 1930s version.
Oh, yeah, the original one, yeah.
The original Razor's Edge. And I didn't know that. But because the reason it's still based upon the book, but the movie that Bill Murray did is closer to the book, it's not a remake of the film.
Yes.
Of the original film.
Because there are things that would not have flown in a 1930s film for sure.
Yeah. I'm sure that was not too kind.
You can have like, you know, sex or drugs and those kind of films.
Yeah. That would have been kind of bad. That one resonated with me a lot. I know Master and Commander resonated with you.
It's just such a rousing, fun movie that should be boring, and it's everything but boring.
I still get chills thinking about Breakdown.
Yeah, Breakdown really stuck with you in a bad way, and I'm...
I mean, it was... It scared me to the bones, man.
Yeah, I was not expecting your reaction to that. Still to this day, I'm kind of taken aback that that was your reaction, because... I never even thought about that being your reaction. Yeah. That would be your reaction to it. To me, yeah. I just thought of it as like a thriller, like a Hitchcockian thriller.
Well, I guess because I've seen Kurt Russell in so many movies where he's kind of like has the sort of the upper hand.
Yeah.
And he did not in this movie. Yeah. And it felt like very scary that it could just like fall apart on him in every second.
Like if Kurt Russell can't handle this, how can I do it?
You know? And you can just see the stress. But that's what a good actor he was. He was able to... really like convey that stress, and I was taking on that stress, you know, of his like lost wife, because I was thinking about, you know, what if that happened? I'm driving through the desert and all of a sudden my wife is missing.
If Caruso could handle that, I'd be screwed, you know.
I mean, would I have the gumption to do what he did? You know what I mean? It's just like, oof, this is tough, man, you know. I was also, let's see, I mean, going back to disappointments, I don't know if I said this in the show, but I mean, I know Empire Records is fun, but I was just so disappointed in it.
I was surprised how much I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. I mean, it's got pretty girls in it that appealed to like the 90s kid in me.
Yeah.
Cause I'm a lot, you know, I was born in 79, so I was of age in the 1990s where I was interested in girls. So it was kind of fun for me to see it from that perspective, but not a very good movie.
Mm-mm.
The plot's not interesting. The characters aren't likable. I don't get why it was so popular.
Right. I know I like movies. What's funny about this whole thing, and I don't mean to jump to the end because I know we got a couple more categories to go through. How much. Some of these movies that I've seen, how much I like more, and some of them I like less.
Nostalgia is a funny thing, and going back and revisiting that,
Like UHF. Like, I now like that movie so much more now, you know?
I felt the way about Airheads, too. Like, I was amazed how much more I liked Airheads.
Okay.
Like, it aged really well for me.
Well, and even in Gotcha. Like, I didn't think that movie was, that was that movie with, you know...
And it's pretty good.
And you're like, wow, this movie's really kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, wow. it's better than you think it would be.
Yeah. Yeah. But then there was also, and Vice Versa, too, is that kind of the same thing.
Like, I remember Vice Versa being a movie that was funny, and it's not.
Yeah. But then you go back and watch, you know.
Well, you know, Vice Versa is good. I'm sorry, I was thinking of 18 again. Again, we're very pro Judge Reinhold. Vice Versa, perfectly fine comedy. Sorry, I got my wires crossed.
Right.
Judge, we love you, man.
But then you go back and watch, you know, like Dragnet or Heathers, you know, and you're just like, nah.
Heathers aged really badly for me. I know that was a big topic during the show at the time. But that movie, to me, is not fun anymore in 2019.
I kind of felt very similar about Dragnet, you know?
Yeah.
So
I mean, he has a great, you know Pep Strebeck, that name is great, and the whole Virgin Connie Swale gag at the end is pretty great, but two great gags do not make a good movie.
No. And one of the movies, I think, going back to the original, the one that resonated the most, that was kind of really hard for both you and I to watch, that I remember watching as a kid and thinking, yeah, this is a good movie, but watching it now as an adult and going, oh my gosh, like all those emotions rushing back, was Lucas.
Yes.
And then it just rips your heart out all over again.
It does. It's such a sad movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hopeful in a way, but it's got such a melancholy heart to it.
Yeah.
That, oh, and it reminded me of all my socially awkward years, and a part of me that just wants to have friends and to be accepted.
I did not know how much the memories that would just come flooding back by watching that
movie. Yeah, in a way, it was a hard watch.
Yeah.
Like, it really got to me.
But it is a fantastic movie.
It's a wonderful movie. It really is.
It deserves Roger Ebert's 4 stars, in my opinion.
It's really great. Yeah. And really, don't get me wrong, I'm glad we watched it.
Yeah.
But a hard watch for all the right reasons, I guess, is the best way to say it.
Yeah. It's definitely not a sit-down, you know, on a Saturday night kind of fun watch. You know what I mean?
But it's, if you want to get in touch with that part of you that you maybe grew out of, that you want to reflect back on,
yeah,
Lucas is perfect for that.
Yeah. So what do you think is one of the, what do you think are the, like, the three best movies?
The three best movies we watched?
Oh, wait a second. No. I don't think we're going to, what do you think of the, let's just go to, never mind. We're going to skip that part. Sorry.
No worries.
All right. Because for the sake of time,
if this was,
because we're talking about all these movies, what has been the best episode, do you think?
Of
the movie pairing, not only like of the movie pairing, but also of like the discussion in the episode of the actual podcast discussion.
Well, you know, I do listen back to most of them to try to get better.
Okay.
The one I find myself thinking flows the best is the UHF Airheads episode.
Really?
That one comes across really well to me. Like, I think that we are both, you know, we're both fluent and have interesting things to say.
Okay.
There's funny bits. There's informative bits.
Yeah.
The movies are interesting to talk about.
Yeah.
I think that's our strongest episode. If I wanted to recommend one to someone, say, this is what we do, I think that'd be the one I gave them.
Really?
Yeah.
I really liked the Master and Commander and White Squall episode.
That one was really interesting. Yeah.
You
had tons of great facts. I learned stuff from that one while we were sitting here, so I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I mean, and I enjoyed just watching you like get so animated about how much you love Master. And I mean, I love Master and Commander too. Don't get me wrong. I thought it was a fantastic movie, you know. I think it's totally, totally awesome.
Yeah.
But you just like totally just fell in love with this movie.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, just like totally loved it.
You know, I love movies. I mean, I've spent most of my life loving movies. So when I love something, I'm going to express that in a very passionate way.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's my heart, man.
Mm-hmm.
Film is a huge part of who I am. So when I love a film, I love it intensely.
Right. Yeah, it was really cool to see you because I think that movie was a movie that, you know, it's not one that you already knew that you loved that we watched again. It was like one that you discovered and you're just like, this is totally, you know, awesome.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
You fell in love for the first time and you only get that experience once.
Yeah. It's very, very, very true. Yeah. I think the only one that comes close to that for me, probably the two that come close to that for me would be Razor's Edge and Rio Bravo.
Yeah, Rio Bravo. It's a movie and
The Conversation. Sorry, I can't
see it. Let's talk about Rio Bravo for a minute. That's a movie that you think would be very like boring. You know, a movie you think would be kind of dry and boring.
Yeah,
and it is so fun.
It is.
And interesting.
Yeah.
And Dean Martin is the coolest in it.
Man, Dean Martin, you just want to be there with those guys.
You want to hang out and like play guitar while they sing and shoot bad guys with them. It's just, it's a fun movie.
Yeah.
Like, I get why it's one of Tarantino's favorite films.
Right.
It's so fun.
I think a lot of people, when they think about Westerns, they think about, you know, like Tombstone or Wyatt Earp or Young Guns or like, you know, whatever. Like, there's going to be this, you know, shootout and there's going to be bank robbers and there's going to be, you know, other stuff. I mean, part of Westerns is the lawlessness, right?
Yeah.
It is this like, you know, wild, you know,
frontier
kind of country, right? You know, whatever. But to break it down the way that Rio Bravo does it and can show the depths of the characters, the way that they did, and a very, you know, simple story. I mean, if you really break it down, it is an incredible simple story.
Yes.
We're going to hold this guy here in the cell until, like, somebody can come get him.
Yeah.
That's basically the whole movie.
Yeah.
But it's, like, how they defend all of that through a guy who's battling with alcoholism, through, you know, the town, through the other people that are trying to get him out, you know. So yeah,
like and it balances that and it could be a very serious story, but yet it actually definitely moves between being serious and being lighthearted to break it up so it doesn't become too oppressive.
Yeah.
And it's such a, like I said, it's so surprisingly entertaining. Because I think so many viewers our age and younger discount older movies. Mm-hmm. They think they're just going to be dry, like fuddy-duddy kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And this movie's really not. It's pure entertainment.
Well, it's a reason that the, you know, Rotten Tomatoes score, it's the only movie that we reviewed that has a 100% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Roger Ebert doesn't have a review of it, obviously, because this is like a movie in the 50s or whatever, right? But yeah, I mean, it's a 91% approval rating for audiences. And I think 91% only because people have like different expectations and, you know, there's tons more people that are involved and they go, nah, I don't like Rio Bravo.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
I don't care about John Wayne. He's an old racist.
Right.
I mean, it could be. We got to call it what it is.
Right.
Separate the art from the artist.
Yeah. Right. So how has the show and all the movies that we watched, I mean, how do you think, I mean, I know how much it's affected me on how I watch movies. How has it really affected you and how you watch movies and how you think about movies?
Well, you know, it's interesting you ask me that because I thought about that because I kind of had a feeling you were going to ask me that. Because I ask you that all the time.
Right.
I constantly want to, like pick your brain about how this has affected you.
Right.
But, you know, because for me, I watch a ton of movies already, obviously. I mean, last year I watched nearly 300 films.
Oh, wow.
This year I think I'm around 220, maybe. But anyway, what this has done for me and what I'm grateful for is it has forced me to watch movies I wouldn't have normally watched otherwise.
Okay.
Because even I can get into my niches of things I know I like.
Right.
Like kung fu movies
or
like crime dramas.
Right.
You know, or that kind of thing.
Right.
And I wouldn't have watched, you know, necessarily watched, you know, Witness or Working Girl.
Uh-huh. Well, that kind of thing. You hated Working Girl.
I did, but now I know. You know, I mean, I'm so glad I watched it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
yeah.
Or I wouldn't have watched The Razor's Edge.
Oh, right, this is true.
I probably wouldn't. I may have gotten a Master Commander at some point.
Right. Okay.
But I don't know when that would have been.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't have rewatched. I mean, I saw Sneakers when I was 10 years old.
Oh,
I never
my God.
I never would have went back and watched Sneakers again.
Right. Years old?
I think that's right. Yeah, I mean, the timeline's a little fuzzy.
Right.
But I was maybe 11, 12. Okay. All right. But, you know, I'm 40, so that's a long time ago.
I mean, I think I saw War Games when I was like 9. So.
Yeah.
I know it's changed, like, it's affected me by how I watch movies and how I approach them and how I think about the nostalgia of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And now, instead of thinking about, oh, I really love this movie, like, I want to watch it again, like, you know, movies from my past and from my childhood, mm-hmm. it really makes me sit there and second guess and question, would I really like it? And
I'm not sure if that's good or not.
Well, it means that, you know, it leads into this, and maybe this will help.
Okay.
Okay. So when I, you know, it's kind of like when I first got into like Laserdisc and stuff like that and exploring the technology because I'm a techno nerd and I'm like, I really like, you know, this kind of like antiquated format and it's just kind of cool. And then, but then you think about the movies that you want to own. Like you have to, you know, if you don't have something like say, you know, say one of our listeners, like, you know, they probably watch Netflix or like whatever. They may not even have a DVD player.
Yeah.
Like you got, or, you know, say they want to watch VHS. You got to get the VHS. You got to get the collection. You got to own it, right?
Yeah.
So I started from scratch, like not having any Laserdisc movies. And I have to think, what movies do I really want? And all these movies were made pre 1999 or 2000 or whatever. And you know, they went back and did a lot of, you know, movies from the 30s and 40s. Like, mm-hmm. you can find the 1934 version of The Razor's Edge on Laserdisc if you want, you know, stuff like that. So it wasn't just stuff that in the 80s and 90s of modern movies. I mean, you can find a lot of older movies, too. So I have to think about that. And it really makes me question, you know, what I really, you know, want to watch. What really speaks to me. And, you know, what I know would be good and bad. And it kind of makes me also, like, pick apart, like, what makes a good movie good? What makes a bad movie bad? Like, what is this trying to say? Like, you know.
It helps you understand your own taste better.
Yeah.
And eventually, I think you'll internalize that to the point where it won't even be such a conscious train of thought.
Yeah.
You'll just know, like, oh, I like this. And if you ask me, I can explain why, but I won't be consciously thinking of why I like it while I'm watching it.
Right. But a prime example of this is like Empire Records.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, that movie was fun when I watched it back when I was in, you know, in college and like all the music. But then I watch it now and I'm like, this is sad. This is terrible. I watched this. I like this movie. Like for real.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of one of those type of deals where you're just like really sad that you, it really makes me question about what, because whatever, and also going back to the Laserdisc thing, whatever movie that you own is like a movie that you want to watch. So, exactly. I mean, even though that I may see a movie, I'll go into the store or I'll look through and I'll go, well, that's a cool movie, but would I really want to watch it again and again and again? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I don't just own movies that, you know, that I would want that, that are cool or other people think are cool.
Yeah.
You know, I want to own movies that, you know, like for instance, you love the movie Trainspotting.
I do.
I found the Laserdisc, the Criterion version of Trainspotting in the store and I left it at the store.
Yeah.
It broke your heart, but Trainspotting is not a movie that I want to sit and watch
and that's,
all the
time. And that's fine because it's your collection. It's it goes back to, it's a reflection of you.
Yeah.
I think of my collection.
Because I'm not just going to own it because
it's cool.
Everybody likes Trainspotting.
Or because it says Criterion.
You own Trainspotting. Like,
who are you trying to impress? Yeah.
Right. Now, if they had the Criterion of Pulp Fiction, I'm going to buy that guy. Yeah.
But, I think of my collection as like a bonsai garden in a way. Like, sometimes I trim things away. Like, oh, yeah, I bought this. I don't really watch it. Let me get rid of it.
Uh-huh.
I've really tried to pare my collection down to just the things that I think I may want to return to someday.
Okay.
I may never get around to it. I don't like to think about that because it gives me, you know, anxiety. Right. But one day I may want to watch, you know.
That's true.
This movie again. So I have it just in case because streaming does not have everything.
Yeah.
As we've learned from trying to do this show.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's nerve-wracking to try to find something for the show that's not available on Amazon Prime or Netflix or Hulu.
Mm-hmm, right.
You know? It's hard.
And I would say just lastly, like real quick before we get to the last part of it, is that it's also affected me because looking at all the facts and gathering up all the facts, I now understand a lot more about how movies get put together and made and, you know, how like certain actors get to play certain roles, you know, because one of the things we talk about, like it, you know, this almost was this person in this movie and like whatever, and how those certain things change how the movie like really is or whatever and how, you know, this movie would have been way different. You know, The Matrix would have been very different with Will Smith as, you know, as Neo.
Yeah.
And it's really surprising, but it's really kind of cool to know how all these movies get put together and how many people are involved in putting them together. And, you know, it made me, want to go see, and I did go see in the theater, the new Quentin Tarantino movie, which has a lot to do with that. A lot of the movies that we reference and talk about, you know.
And you get to watch it with a newfound background, knowing more about movies and what he was going for with that film.
Yeah.
So it's already started to inform how you ingest art now. Like the way you ingest the cinema has now changed because of this. And that makes my heart swell a little bit.
It's all right.
No, I'm serious. Yeah, I know it's a little melodramatic, but it makes me happy because it's an art form that means a lot to me.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that I can share that with you and help you discover a little bit of what I see in the art form.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, quickly, top three movies from this past season?
Top three movies, period.
Yeah.
Well, Master and Commander.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Say quickly, and I'm the Long Goodbye.
Oh, okay.
And let's see here. And I'm going to say Django, because I love Django, the original Django, so much.
Okay.
I know that's kind of a cheat, because I loved it before the show started. I love it still.
Okay. I am going to go with, and I'm looking, I have, hold on a second.
50's a lot.
It's a hard pick. It's a hard pick. I don't know. I have to go with the Razor's Edge. I have to, because, you know, one of the, you know, the top three, meaning our top three recommendations. If you haven't seen any of the movies on this list, or one of the top three recommendations that you would recommend to anybody to watch the movie. And I would say The Razor's Edge, The Conversation, I don't know.
There's a lot, man.
There's a lot.
The if Fly, you haven't even seen it.
Yeah. I was either going to go with The Fly or Witness. I can't tell you.
That's a tough choice. Let's see, you can do four then. You want to do...
Yeah. All right.
And that gives us a top seven recommendations for the season.
Yeah. I mean, those are, I think, you know, some of the movies. So once again, we'll go over the list. So, Master and Commander.
Master Commander. The Long Goodbye.
The Long Goodbye.
And the original Django for me.
Original Django. And I'll go with Razor's Edge, The Conversation, Witness, and The Fly.
That's a pretty impressive list for somebody who wants to learn more about movies.
Yeah, I would definitely agree.
Yeah, that's a murderer's row right there.
Yeah, murder.
Use a sports analogy.
Yeah, to use a, yeah, for sure. That, I mean, that's some heavy hitter movies for sure.
And some wildly entertaining movies and very different movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we didn't even talk about The Fly. Like, you know. Yeah. But anyway, so many movies. Yeah. So what do we have to look forward to in next season? You kind of hinted at it, but I mean, what do you think the kind of the things that we're going to get into?
Well, I think we're going to get into maybe a little bit of animation.
Okay.
A little bit
we haven't done anything animated whatsoever.
Yeah. I think we're going to do something a little weird in animation at some point.
Yeah.
Non-traditional animation.
Right.
Or maybe I don't want to give too much away.
Right.
I mentioned that we're probably going to talk a little bit about Tarantino. I'm not sure. Going to say what we're going to talk about with Tarantino just yet.
Right.
Maybe I'll give it away a little bit in our next episode.
Right.
Our season opener.
Yeah.
Which was going to... Let's talk about the season opener for a moment.
Sure.
We've already planned this out. We're going to talk about a very magical time period.
Yeah.
In cinema before we go back to our regular format. We're going to diverge from the format one more time.
Mm-hmm.
To give us a palate cleanser between season one and two.
And we're going to talk about the movies of the summer of 1984.
What a magical period.
1984 was also the, I believe, the start of the show, The Stranger Things. Because it was, you know, it wasn't during the summer, because Stranger Things happens like
in the fall
because they're in school or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But this would have been like the summer before, like these would have been the movies that were playing at the movie theater. And I think part of the reason that we're, you know, a lot of people are nostalgic about the 80s right now in the 2019s, in the 2018s, you know, was, I think due in part a lot to, you know, that time period of the summer of 84.
Yeah. It's an amazing list of movies.
Yeah.
We're not going to go into too much, but you can Google it if you want or listen in when that episode comes out.
I even found another, I found multiple, stories about it. People have written about the summer of 1984. Yeah. It was a magical time for movies, and it really helped shape how we think about movies and how, you know, the movies that got made after that. Yeah.
It's definitely part of the video culture origin story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then, I think, I don't know, We got, I mean, I, or we have more actors to talk about.
We're going to get into guys like Robert Duvall. We're going to finally get to Christopher Walken, which I've been bugging you about for months.
You know, I got to talk about Chris Walken next season, in season two.
Yeah, I'm going to get you to watch some murder mysteries or some exploitation films.
Or maybe some horror films.
Yeah, we're going to get back into horror. Yeah. Because there's lots of subgenres of horror.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we maybe we'll watch like some slasher movies. Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah. So much we get to literally, guys. Right. We have so many ideas for things we could talk about.
Yeah. I mean, I think we have to do some more... you know, type westerns in there. Maybe not so old. Maybe some a little more modern.
Yeah, we could go into the modern westerns. We could. Yeah. I mean, we could always talk about, you know, think about all the westerns that have come out just in the 2000s.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying we're going to do this, but think about like the dueling Doc Holliday films of Tombstone and Wyatt Earp. That's a possibility.
Yeah, definitely so.
I don't necessarily want to watch Wyatt Earp, but but I digress.
It's so long. Yeah.
But yeah, so many possibilities.
But doesn't Wyatt Earp have one of your favorite actors in it?
It's got
Kurt Russell?
No, you're thinking of Tombstone.
Oh, Tombstone has Kurt
Russell. Tombstone's got everybody in it.
Yeah.
Wyatt Earp.
Well, I do own Tombstone on Laserdisc.
Yeah, it's got Wyatt Earp has got Dennis Quaid and Kevin Costner.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah.
It's very long. But
Say no more.
And we haven't really done anything else. Like there's thing about we could do space exploration.
Yeah.
There's so many good space films. No. These are just some of the things we've talked about. Like other actors and actresses. I want to do an episode on Jamie Lee Curtis at some point.
Oh, definitely.
And I want to do an episode on Ed Harris. Oh. One of the very first actors we were brought up when talking about the show was Ed Harris.
Yeah, I want to talk about Robert Duvall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One of the greatest actors of all time.
Yeah. Totally blessed to see some of his films and some of his work, you know?
Yeah. And talk about directors, we haven't watched, speaking of, we haven't even really touched on Scorsese yet.
No.
Not really.
Mm-mm. Haven't gone there. We haven't, one of the directors that we've not really talked about, Steven Spielberg. I mean,
we barely talked about Steven Spielberg, yeah.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about in the Continental Divide episode, but really there's some hidden gems. Yeah. In his catalog that aren't, you know, Schindler's List. Yeah. You know what I mean?
The only movie we've talked about is Minority Report of all the random movies he's done.
Yeah, that's true. Minority Report was also Steven Spielberg.
But out of his entire list, that's not the strongest film in his list by any means.
No.
And it's still a great movie.
Yeah.
Like, his lesser movies are still great. But, again, we barely touched on, like, one of the greatest living commercial directors of all time.
Yeah.
So much stuff, so many places we could go with this.
Right.
So... there's so many places we could go, so many things to discover or rediscover. I'm really excited about season two.
Yeah, I am too. I'm looking forward to, you know, watching more movies and discovering it. And then maybe we'll see where we are at the end of season two. That'll be even more interesting.
I imagine I'll be older and even more sleepy.
Because that would be after 100 movies.
That sounds so daunting. I kid.
Well, I don't really have any sort of facts. I don't have notes. I don't have my iPad with me. Well, the only really fact that I was going to say, I already mentioned, is that, you know, Rio Bravo has 100% critic rating. Just to mention also, too, Django has a 92% critic rating on Rotten Tomatoes. So that should tell you a lot. Even from our recommended list, it's also from theirs. And then from Roger Ebert, who we love so much, we have on the list, there are five movies, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, no, 7 movies that have a 4-star rating from Roger Ebert. Mm-hmm. And that is The Fly, Working Girl, Witness, Lucas, Master and Commander, The Conversation, and Minority Report. And from our recommended list, that's 1, 2, 3, 4 of them.
That's not bad.
Yeah, 4 out of 7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was not always right.
Well, I mean, and we're picking from a very sort of select list here. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah.
But you know, I'm going to say one other fact. You know, one reason I wanted to do this show was I thought it would be good to, for us to, you know, get to hang out more, get to talk more, and become better friends. Yeah. And I'm glad that I've gone on this journey with you, my friend. I'm looking forward to, I honestly am looking forward to 50 more movies, 25 more episodes, yeah, or as long as you'll put up with me.
And hopefully we can look forward to some more articles on the website.
That's coming.
So hopefully we can get some more interaction there. And, you know, once again, as always, we would love to hear from you. Hit us up on Twitter. Hit us up on our website.
Facebook.
Yeah. Give us your recommendations.
Yeah. Give us your feedback.
What should we watch for season 2?
Love us, hate us, just talk to us, guys. No. We want to hear from you.
All right. Sounds good. Well, until next time, I am Ryan Acree.
And I'm Matthew Estri. Go watch some movies, guys, and celebrate with us.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Video Culture. You can check us out on Twitter at Video Culture 2.
That's the number 2 for two guys talking about movies like Ryan and myself.
And you can also check us out on Facebook. Just search for Video Culture Podcast.
Also, be sure to stop by our official website, video-culture.com. There we have the entire show archives, as well as articles about film.
Yeah, so check us out. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, coming out with us, talk movies. Did you like the show? Do you hate the show? Do you like or hate the movies we talked about? Let us know. Come chat with us, and let's all watch movies together.
In a world in the year 2017,
in a time of tradition,
in a city where anything can happen,
in a war that isn't his,
every day in New York City,
on the Miami Police Force,
in the deep south,
from the sewers of Gotham, from the rooftops of Gotham, above Gotham,
within this skyscraper high above the city,
in a town driven by competition,
in a world that's powered by violence,
it's Christmas Eve in L.A.,
on New Year's Eve of the last decade of the 20th century,
Detectives Mike Lowry and Marcus Burnett,
Special Agent John Krueger,
Harry Tasker,
and New York cop John McLean.
They're not just partners.
They were three cops who had nothing in common.
They are America's first line of defense.
But no matter how much you love them,
all that stands between a city and a disaster is a man,
a reluctant soldier,
an ex-con,
the perfect enemy.
They found him near a plane crash.
What if you couldn't remember?
The most deadly submarine ever built.
Secrets have a way of coming back to haunt you.
When ghosts start arriving by the boatload,
it was the perfect crime.
They thought they had it all figured out.
But there was one thing they didn't plan on.
Now, they're about to collide.
One bullet at a time.
They can't change course.
But he doesn't have a choice.
His loyalty is to a child.
Fighting for everything he holds dear.
He's going to have to save her.
The only thing more dangerous than what he knows is the end of a man's journey.
He's back.
For good. For justice. For freedom. For family. For keeps.
The passion is real.
They don't follow the rules. They make them.
This summer.
This fall.
This Thanksgiving.
But this Christmas.
This holiday season.
Academy Award winner Kevin Spacey.
Antonio Banderas.
Tom Hanks.
Kim Basinger.
Mel Gibson.
Brad Pitt.
Bruce Willis.
Sean Connery.
Robin Williams.
Denzel Washington.
Joe Pesci.
Samuel L. Jackson.
Ed Harris.
Ed Harris.
Ed Harris.
Ed Harris.
Ed Harris.
And Ed Harris.
The Long Hunt. For Legends of the English
Terminator Cousin
Part 3.
Cruise Control.
I'd like a can of peas, please.